Support for TPR comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas's largest research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santikos studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Type 2 diabetes is a chronic health illness that can be managed, but frequently that's not so easy. But a new study conducted in San Antonio and published recently in the Annals of Family Medicine found that one-third of patients were able to control their type 2 diabetes after building a trusting relationship with a promotora, a community health worker. How can San Antonio build on this and find ways to help those with type 2 diabetes? We're joined today by Dr. Carolina Gonzalez-Schlenker, assistant professor at the Joe R. and Teresa Lozano Long School of Medicine at UT Health San Antonio, second author of the study Community Health Workers as Trust Builders and Healers, a cohort study in primary care. And Dr. Schlenker, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also with us is Dr. Carlos Roberto Jaén, the professor and chairman of the Family and Community Medicine at the Long School of Medicine at UT Health San Antonio and senior study author. And Dr. Jaén, good to have you here.
Thank you.
So Dr. Schlenker, talk about, you know, how the study worked. What were y'all trying to do with this study?
Well, basically, we were in charge of helping people with diabetes decrease their A1C. That was the biological marker that was part of the project. And we were assigned by our clinicians in primary care at the Robert B. Green campus, people that have diabetes, patients that have diabetes. They were assigned a promotor or promotora who accompany them for, we offer them 12 weeks of accompaniment to make sure that they understood, were able to manage, and found the meaning on taking care of their diabetes. And we carry out for that for 4 years. After those years, and then the research was conducted in evaluating the impact. And we found out that actually the A1C was reduced on those that were able to manage and control their diabetes for four consecutive years. So
there was 12 weeks of face-to-face working with the promotora, building trust, explaining how to manage type 2 diabetes. And the promotora went away, but you continued to track the patients and see how well they were doing it. At the end of 4 years, you found that a third of them were doing a pretty good job.
Right, because they belong to our clinic. The data was available to see how they were
and so,
doing.
Dr. Jaén, why is that important?
So I think a good piece to keep in mind, diabetes can have many complications. One of the ways in which we can reduce the chances of complications is to control their hemoglobin A1C, which is a measure of how well the glucose is or the sugar is controlled. But the bottom line is that in our population, in our communities, many people struggle with trying to get control of diabetes because there are many factors that come into play. It's not just about medications. It's not just about physical activity. It's not just about diet. But it's actually understanding and trusting the healthcare system and finding ways to get the support they need to make it happen. In our study, a third of them, which is a very unusual, I don't know of any primary care studies that have that kind of effect 4 years later in a relatively short intervention. But it really brought together not only the trust building, which was a key to the study, but the ability to then provide state-of-the-art medications and support from a clinic that was responsive to what they need in that context.
And so I guess you had a control group that didn't receive any sort of promotora?
The way the study was designed is that we enrolled almost 1,000 diabetics that were out of control from our clinic. And then we then grouped the patients who received the intervention into three groups. One group we called outreach, which were the people who agreed to see the community health worker, but because of their life circumstances, they couldn't get beyond just saying, yeah, I can see you, whatever, and finish. There was a second group that had some involvement, but didn't quite get to the point where they figured out how they needed to, what they needed to do. In the third group, the 30% we're talking about are what we call self-care generativity. That means they went, I get it. I need to pay attention to my numbers in terms of the cholesterol and blood pressure in my sugar. I need to show up for my clinics. I need to trust my components. But I also need to pay attention to what are the food sources that I have, what are the opportunities for physical activity, the skills that are necessary to take good care of diabetes. So we then, at the end of the 12 weeks, have the community health workers or promotores identify them before we knew anything about their hemoglobin A1Cs or the experience with the hospitals or emergency departments. And then we follow the three groups. So they all had the opportunity to have the intervention, but some of them could not complete it, and but some, by 30% or more, were able to do that.
And Dr. Schlenker, the individuals who did follow the advice of the promotores, got their blood sugar under control, what did they see in terms of these health complications that we talk about? Did they see improvements? Were there less hospitalizations?
Yes. And again, like Dr. Hyen mentioned, this was, you know, after the fact. But they basically, the promotores, when they, the promotores were themselves who, the ones that moved the patient from one stage to the other. This patient just reached outreach. So we talk, I listen to them, but then they just, you know, they, their complications of their lives made it impossible for them to continue on the relationship. They had a little mini intervention. The second one was they created a trust relationship with the promotores, but they just more complications. They saw one thing, another thing went wrong, and they could never really had enough space to actually take that wheel, you know, in their hands and say, okay, I'm on board. I got it. I can do this. The third one is the one that they had the three things. They felt things were comprehended, they were manageable, and they were meaningful, because now they made sense. So basically, the promotores describe this sort of, like Dr. Hahn says, this aha moment, this sense of coherence. You know, I understand this. I know I can do it. And I know how much, I know where I want to start. I know which way I want to start. And this is my process. That's why we call it self-care generativity. It's not following the prescriptive, you know, steps of some external, you know, model. It is the patient generating their own initiative.
All right, so we're going to have a community conversation right now about type 2 diabetes in San Antonio and how we can help each other do self-care, manage diabetes, help raise awareness of diabetes, because this is a scourge in San Antonio. It is a chronic condition that is shortening lives. It's adding to our misery index here in San Antonio. We got to do something about it. If you can call in, tell us what you want to see done about type 2 diabetes in San Antonio. How has it impacted you? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Have you had trouble accessing health care to manage your diabetes? How has a community health worker helped you with your type 2 diabetes health care? What problems have you experienced with self-care with your type 2 diabetes? And what advice have you sought for your diabetes journey? Have you had any difficulty in finding helpful information about diabetes? We're talking about diabetes, type 2 diabetes self-care with community health workers. A recent study has shown that they can do incredible strides in helping people manage their type 2 diabetes. And our phone lines are open. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can tweet at us at TPRSource. Send us an email to thesource@tpr.org. So, Dr. Hyen, I read that the number one health condition, chronic health illness that is Googled is type 2 diabetes. This is so there's a lot of people who have it and a lot of people that need information about type 2 diabetes, but probably going to Google may not be the best way to get good information about how to treat your diabetes because there is so much misinformation in online about healthcare, especially now more than ever. But it shows you that there is a need for reliable, trustful information, right?
That is true. It's also true that diabetes has a very high proportion of people in San Antonio have diabetes, higher than in many other parts of the country. Diabetes is a complex disease. It can affect your heart, can affect your kidneys, can give you problems in terms of stroke. Amputations are frequent with that. And diabetes is insidious, meaning that it happens and sometimes people don't even realize that they have it. So it's very important to get connected and to really find ways to identify whether or not you have diabetes. Diabetes is also more common in some families, and it's important to get that connection. But I think that what our study is really showing is that just getting connected to the healthcare system is not sufficient. You really need to find ways to understand and to get a better sense of trusting what you're doing and what you could do for your diabetes. There are nowadays very effective medications. Physical activity, diet are important parts of that package. And we need to find ways to get the word out. Sometimes the information in Google is not accurate. It's sometimes difficult to find out which one it is. But I think it's important to always find ways to connect and find out more about that.
So, Dr. Schlenker, with the program Nosotros, which is the community healthcare program promotores that you manage, mm-hmm. If you have a promotora, they go to one of their patients, and their patient tells them, "I Googled this, and this is what they told me. They told me if I, you know, drink this tea with my stand on one foot and." You know, what do they tell them? I mean, the trust that's involved.
Right. And again, how do you build trust, right? And what makes you trust someone? Is someone that obviously is caring about you. And this person has to find you where you are. It's non-judgmental. It believes in your capacity to better your circumstance, but first wants to listen. And that's the first thing the promotores do. They listen. Because to get to know you, I need information. How do you see the world from where you are? Why do you do one thing and not another? What do you seek in Google? And what do you find in Google? How did that make you feel? So that gentleness and that respectful and caring interaction is what opens the space where trust becomes possible. You don't come in with a prescriptive, "I know more than you about your life." Actually, promotores, what they bring to me are some amazing stories of resilience and resistance of people trying to figure out how to live with the nonsense around them because no one is there to explain to them why they have to endure what they endure. And it is walking with them. It is joining them where they are. And if you go to Google, what do you find? And how how does that match what the doctor tell you? And let's talk to the doctor to see whether this is, reliable information or not. But they're not going to judge you. They're not going to make you feel less valuable. That is the chronic condition that we are enduring in the system. It's a message of devaluation that we're internalizing and makes us believe that we cannot make sense of our lives, that we cannot see the future. And it is that condition in where we're finding so many of our patients, let alone the complexity of accessing reliable information from healthcare system. You know, do you have insurance? Do you have time to go to the doctor? Do you have the money for the copay? All those barriers are preventing the reliable information to reach our patients.
But even when I go to like the CDC website or the Mayo Clinic and some of these big shot medical outfits, and I go to their website looking at what they have about type 2 diabetes, they blame the patient.
Right.
They say you did this to yourself.
Right.
And you should have done a better job of managing this. And it does seem very blame oriented.
Right. And that's what we are basically challenging. This idea of this individualistic view of the disease. It is you who didn't exercise, didn't eat correctly, didn't deal with your stress. So it's all on you. And when trust becomes the source of healing, that's speaking about relationships, right? That's speaking about you connected to others and to your environment. It's not just you. And how is that impacting your health? How can you make sense of the world? And how does that become internalized in you? And how does that harm your well-being? So when we talk about the social determinants of health, we're talking mostly about the social determinants of disease. So you flip it to the positive. If you think, okay, so if these are the social determinants of disease, which is this chronic stress, especially of poverty, of incoherence, of lack of futuring, then what would be the counterfactual? What is the good thing? So here is where trust, becomes the healer, the place where we can actually make sense together. So wherever the patient is, the promoter is focused on answering two things. What is it that we want to happen? And that comes what we want and why we want it. And is we together, because I'm here with you. And then the second question is, what were we able to do? Right? So look, see the loop. It's not a linear thing. It's a making sense together to answer those four questions. What do we want? Why do we want it? What do we do? What do we get? If you walk those four questions with a patient, you have a little story, a shared story with a shared future. No matter what it's about, it can be about diabetes. It can be about what you're facing right now in your life that doesn't allow you to even think about diabetes. You are facing another crisis, another worry that your health just lies out. And you're gonna be there with that patient walking where the patient is. And it is that caring that convinces the patient, say, this person actually does care about me. It's not just coming to preach me. To preach to me is coming to help me.
So, Dr. Hyam?
So I think that one of the key components of our intervention is that we were not focused on diabetes.
Okay, that blew my mind.
I intended to do that because we were focused on the person. What is it that makes you tick? What is it that you want to do? They happen to be diabetics, but they don't. We don't define and we don't focus on a disease. We focus on the whole person. So what Dr. Schlenker is describing is sort of the notion of what is important to you, Martin, what makes you tick, what is it you want to do? So our intervention was atypical in the sense that it wasn't disease focused, it was focused on the person. However, our evaluation was disease focused, and we looked at what happened. But the main component was really about healing, and healing in the sense of the whole person, not just because you're diabetic, but do you have injuries that are related to your condition? Do you have injuries that are related to where you live and in your life history? You have biography and you have biology. What about your biography is affecting that biology, and how can we help you connect?
But there are people who are focused on the dollar signs. And so if you tell them, if we invest in promotoras and community health workers, and they spend 12 weeks with these individuals and help them get their diabetes under control, and 4 years later, they're still keeping their diabetes under control, and they're not getting hospitalized, they're not getting amputations, they're not getting dialysis, that means with the investment in this, if we're able to bring this to a fuller group of our population, there could be a lot of money saved, couldn't there?
So if you define healthcare as money, I would agree with your assessment.
Well, that's what our society does.
It does. And I think in some ways our work is countercultural because we really are focused on healing. There are savings. There are ways that we can pay, and this is a good investment in the people that we're doing. But we are purposely not focused on just the dollars, because to the extent that medicine focuses on dollars, we lose the soul of what we are intending to do and our ability to heal. Our focus in the context of a broken healthcare system is still on healing and is still on trying to find ways to help people where they are to get better. I think that both can happen, but if they... The savings and the money will come if you do the right thing, is our approach. And I think we have demonstrated clearly that that's the case.
And so, Dr. Schlenker?
Yes, so basically, trust is not monetizable, right? I cannot tell one of the promoters, okay, bill me for trust in an hour, right? You can tell a doctor, see 4 patients in an hour, and the poor doctor is trying to just pull them all through. But trust, when you focus on trust building, it has its own time frame. You cannot make it slower or faster. It has its own time frame. And it's respecting that caring and that respect, navigating those two things. When do I go in and get more into your life and draw more information? And when I step back and you send me a message that I've gone far enough. And how do I show you that I am trying to care for you at your pace, at the sacredness of your being, in where I am invested in helping? So again, we're not talking about profit, the profit motive being the driver at all. It is the fact that these promotores, these community health workers, are moved by the suffering of the patient. They care, and you feel when they care because they really accompany you, walking what you're walking and trying to see the world from your shoes and making sure that we're making steps to that. And maybe once this crisis mode that we find you in sort of allows you to take a breather, hey, how about thinking about your diabetes, right? But it is when the patient finds purpose, when the patient finds, you know, I matter. You make me feel like I matter. And I know I do.
We're taking a break. We come back, we'll continue our discussion about diabetes self-care success and community health workers. And you can call in. We want to hear from you. How has type 2 diabetes impacted you and your family? How has good advice and trust made a difference? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, and we'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, and we're talking about type 2 diabetes in San Antonio. It is bad. It happens a lot, and we need to be doing more to get it under control. A recent study shows that community health workers are key in order to do that. They build trust, and they bring good advice and leadership and help people navigate a complex health system. And it's making a difference. So how do we maximize this? How do we help people get access to community health workers, promotores? And how has it impacted you? Give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can send us an email to thesource@tpr.org. So part of the success, it seems like, of this of the promotores is having cultural understanding. And this is important. In order to build the trust. And so Dr. Carolina Gonzalez-Schlenker, I mean, do we have this cultural understanding in all the different kind of cultures that we would see in our diverse society?
Yes, and that is, again, what probably connects us all, is our need to be cared and respected, right? So the promotores enter the life of the patient in that tone, in believing this person can actually take care of their lives, and they have a purpose in their life, and I need to understand them. So there are different frameworks, belief systems, different languages. The promotores navigate all of that, because the formula in the nosotros is like an abstract catalyst. It is a formula that can be applied to any human interaction. It's based on caring and respect. Is a fine-tuned dialogue between change and stability, and how are we sort of braiding our stories together for a good future that is possible for you. So wherever you are, I'm going to find you, right? You might need, an interpreter. Sometimes the promotores brought interpreters because patients were refugees from other countries. We had people that were deaf and they use sign language. All of those diverse populations respond when somebody cares. And what we find is that people are believing that our system doesn't care. And that's when we lose their trust. If I feel that my healthcare doesn't really care and I'm vulnerable, then I cannot trust them, right? And that's what is at risk. That's why the caring that our doctors have in their hearts needs to be lifted and needs to find a fertile ground to land, to care for the individual in spite of all the barriers for that caring to come across.
So Dr. Carlos Roberto Hayen, and you're the senior author of this study. Now, we're talking about trust, and trust is important, but it's also practical information that people need. How am I going to navigate this system? I don't understand what they're asking for me. Do the navigators or the community health workers, promotores, are they able to help with that practical information?
Yes, part of the innovation in our approach is the fact that the community health workers or promotores are embedded in as part of our primary care team. So they are not there to do errands. They're full members of the team, just like a clinical pharmacist or a psychologist or a family doctor. And they are able to connect and navigate and sometimes accompany the patients to their appointments. And sometimes they're in their home and they call the nurse or the doctor and say, they have a question about this, what should we do? So it's that tightly connected ability to bring the resources that we have in the healthcare and make them accessible in a way that is understandable and they can actually make it happen. So they function as navigators as well, but I think that happens and that navigation happens after that trust is built initially in us. And because they're not only the trust is sort of the basis, but they also need clinical care. They need access to medications. They need access to specialists, and it's a difficult situation, particularly in our communities and in our state, when that is a problem.
And Dr. Schlenker, the promotoras or the community health workers, I hear the phrase engaging with the disengaged, that they're going to people who feel like that the system doesn't care about them, and they are advocating for the system and tell them, there is a system here to help you and it is here for you. But why are people not getting that message anyway? How can people, why do we have to go in this face-to-face, one-to-one building trust type relationship? What's wrong with what we're doing right now that we just can't do that wholesale?
Well, the system is pointing a different direction, and it is pointing in some, more administrative, profit-driven, not just as a healthcare system. I mean, the whole culture is, we tend to see, growing the economy is gonna grow our human development and our well-being. And that has proven to be a failed social design. So the groundbreaking message is that there are certain things that are the most important things, and you cannot monetize them. And healthcare is one where we need to draw the line and make sure this is interrupted, and we become critical and more aware of what is at stake. I think the main thing is, like Dr. Hines says, trust brings in information. The information that the promotores bring us are not really necessary for the corporate model to continue on. They can continue on without the story of the patient, but are we going to heal them? There's a contradiction between wanting more clients for your business versus healing your patient, right? And we have tolerated this double message that the patient get that puts trust at risk in the institution. So if our charge is to heal, we need to understand where the harm comes. How are we going to heal if our picture of what's harming our patients is incomplete? And by now, I mean, the study was done from 2012, 2017. But by now, it's 5 years later, I have heard thousands of stories
of people with diabetes. Tell me a story.
Oh, my goodness. I have a daughter who was a troubled teenager because my husband left us. She became a drug addict, had a child. Now I'm raising my three grandchildren. I have diabetes. I cannot go to the doctor because I need childcare. I need to work to support these children because I don't want them to go in the foster care system. And I just have this many hours. They're not giving me enough hours, so I cannot pay the copay to go see the ophthalmologist. So I don't know what's going on with my eyes. I sometimes remember to take my insulin. Sometimes I forget because the kids are having issues at school. I need to put food on the table.
So what's the promotora going to do for that person?
Yes. So what do? They prioritize. They listen first. They listen. Because who listens to that person, right? So when you are loaded with problems that need your immediate attention, you feel disoriented, you feel like you just want to give up, right? So when somebody's there to listen, what you're doing is you're putting it in words. Just by putting your problems in words by an attentive listener that wants to understand you and is going to prioritize with you, you already are seeing some of the solutions. Okay, so how do we deal with this complexity, right? And I'm just telling you all the pieces. So our tool that we have is like a puzzle. So you need, okay, to take care of your diabetes, you need your numbers. You know where you are in your blood sugars. You need to take your medications. You need to make it to your appointments. You need to eat well. You need to do some exercise. You need some stability in your relationship so you can predict the future. You can predict tomorrow, right? So what is your puzzle? So the promoter basically, okay, which piece of the puzzle should we focus on? Let's focus on this piece of the puzzle. Let's put our energy on here. Like Dr. Hans says, we don't focus just on the diabetes. We focus on the person. How are you going to start thinking about how to eat healthy if you don't have food on the table? If you are facing an eviction and you just need to make sure that those three kids that are about to be on the street find some shelter. And these are the patients that, how are we going to start talking about diabetes when you have this level of critical needs that our society and our culture is tolerating? We're tolerating too much human suffering. Inhumanities, we're finding inhumanities out there.
We're taking a break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion of type 2 diabetes in San Antonio, helping people manage their type 2 diabetes with productive, positive self-care and community health workers who are doing that. And you can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. It's The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about diabetes in San Antonio. 15.5% of San Antonians have been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Many have not been diagnosed, yet they have it. Probably the first thing that's going to tell them that they have diabetes is a health complication. And it could be really, really bad. My advice to everyone is you, if you think you have diabetes, get tested, find out for sure, and figure out how to start dealing with it and treat pre-diabetes seriously. If you've got a question or a comment about diabetes, call in. The number is 833-877-8255. So, Dr. Carlos Roberto Hayen, San Antonio and diabetes, it's bad here, and yet many people don't know that they have it. How can we get more people tested? How can we bring people out of uncertainty into certainty?
Excellent question. I mean, part of the issue is that many of the people who may have it and will suffer the consequences of having it may not have the opportunity to be tested or to be connected. I think of the time when we had a group of working Latinos who work in construction, and often they will have diabetes diagnosed, but their opportunities to take care of it are limited since they work from sunup to sundown. And they work in conditions that are often dirty, they're often dangerous, and they're often very demanding. And at the same time,
when you get off work, you're just beat up.
Mm-hmm. Beat up, and then when you get a foot infection or something and you don't necessarily know how to treat it, and then you end up with an amputation, which is also very high in San Antonio. And you see people on the streets that are former workers who can now no longer support their families because they have lost their limbs and their ability to ambulate. So particularly males in this community need to be very mindful and very clear about accessing and getting tested for diabetes. But anyone who really have the opportunity need to make it happen. Unfortunately, we often don't see that until very late when they either present with a heart attack or a foot infection that is out of control.
Right, and diabetes is an unforgiving disease. Damage done is damage done. You really can't come back from that. Let's go to a caller. We have Lupe online. Lupe, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I am questioning why is it that we are the only country that has a diabetes problem? And when you go to see the doctor for your diabetes, they give you like 10 pills to take, and I'm not taking nothing right now. So my question is, my real question is, why do we have a diabetes problem in this country? Is it because we don't work like we used to, or is it big pharma?
So what do you mean you're not taking anything right now? I mean, if the doctor gives you the pills, you won't take them?
Well, no, because all of a sudden I go to him and he's like, you need to start taking a total of 10 pills. No, I'm not a pill box.
All right, Lupe, thank you so much for your call. I'm really glad you called in. I appreciate it. So let's go to Dr. Schlenker, and can you help me understand?
Yeah. So let's say promoter goes, knock at the door and says, hi, I'm here because your doctor cares about you.
I'm following up.
And he could tell or she could tell that when she asks you to 10 pills, you just put a face like, I'm not a pill box. That's a good point. And the patient walks out like empty-handed, right, of that visit. So paying a copay and all was useless for them. And they feel frustrated and they feel. So promoter goes in and said, you know, the doctor actually captured your response. He captured that you were not making sense of this indication of take 10 pills. So that's why I'm here, because we want to understand. We want to understand what was going on, right? Open-ended. Let me know. Let me get to know where you are. And basically, the promoters think of three things. First, how important is diabetes right now for you, right? What else is going on in your life? What else are you facing? How come you happen to be diagnosed? Was there already some harm that happened, and now you're way advanced and it's late in the damage? Or was it incidental that you just got a lab and they are diagnosing you? And what else is going on? So basically, how important it is, which is meaningfulness. And then second is, do you comprehend what the doctors say? Comprehensibility. Did the doctor explain what these medicines are for? And why 10, right? Did you ask? Did the doctor explain? And third, can you manage? Can you manage taking 10 pills in those directions? So this is what we call salutogenesis. So this is our engine, right? The promoter is built on that engine. It's not the win-lose game of economics. It's the sense of coherence, what is called salutogenesis. And is life is comprehensibility. Life is, my life has comprehensibility, manageability, and meaningfulness. That means that what I do is important to me, right? So we're going to land on that patient's life and try to understand. But also we're going to come to the story to the doctor and said, this patient is totally against this idea of 10 pills, and why are you right, prescribing 10 pills?
So first, I want to get to Dr. Hyann. If you could just answer Lupe's question. I mean, is the United States the only country with this problem?
Good question, Lupe. And the answer is no. This is not, diabetes is very common. It's very common.
It's a worldwide disease.
It's a global disease.
Well, particularly when the Western diet, you know, is pushed upon non-Western populations.
It's the Western diet, is a lack of physical activity, but also the chronic stress that comes from poverty and the chronic stress that comes from racism and the chronic stress that comes from living in conditions that are not particularly helpful. I want to also address Lupe's concern or notion that it's just a question of pharma and let's just get medications on due. I think it's, as a physician, I want to know, and I want people to tell me, why are you giving me 10 pills? What are you treating? Diabetes often doesn't come alone. It comes with high blood pressure. It comes with high cholesterol. It comes with, and many times with a medication for high blood pressure is necessary. One may not do the trick. You may have to have multiple ones. And depending on where you are with your type, with your diabetes, and we haven't talked about this, but I mean, diabetes comes in two flavors, type 1 and type 2.
Right.
And we're talking mostly about type 2 diabetes. Yeah. Which is mostly the one that is most common here in San Antonio.
I'm going to go to another caller. We're short on time, so let's go to Joe. Joe, you're on the air.
Yes, I've been a type 2 diabetic since 1984, and I've learned a lot. And here it is in a nutshell. You gotta eat zero carbs and zero sugar. You do that, you'll control your diabetes. You'll lose weight. So I eat eggs and turkey sausage, and I eat avocados and celery. I've lost like 35, 40 pounds, and I'm down to 180 now. And blood sugar, no longer taking medication, no longer taking statins for carbs. I mean, for high cholesterol. So that's it in a nutshell. You zero carbs, zero sugar, and stay on a...
Right.
You know, an organic diet.
Well, good for you, Joe. Thank you so much for calling in with that. And just really, really quickly, so I want to get to one more caller. Dr. Hyen, is that a...
So, Joe, I think that's a good idea in terms of minimizing your carbs and minimizing your intake and making efforts to lose weight. However, it's important that you need sufficient protein in your diet, because if not, you're going to lose muscle mass and potentially get all the complications. But it is not a panacea, because depending on where you are in terms of your diabetes type 2, some of them progress very slowly and some progress very fast.
Let's go to Doug, and he's got a similar point. Doug, you're on the air.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking my call. So the idea that sugar leads to the progress of diabetes in our society, when a can of soda has 39 grams of sugar, and we're, as a society, drinking them by the gallons, I think that is a contributing factor. That in low-income communities, you have food deserts where you don't have access to fresh foods, and so folks of low income have to make these tough choices of whether to get something or nothing. You know, a dollar menu is very attractive on somebody with a budget. The problem is the long-term effects are so detrimental to our city and to our nation. I think we need to reevaluate the way we access nutrition in our society at large. Right. And from there, then help people identify how to balance their own diets in a less antiquated way than our traditional food pyramid has been.
Doug, thank you for that. So we definitely need to address the way food is labeled. And at our grocery store, it is not helpful, can be much more helpful. Really quickly, your reaction to that, Dr. Schlenker.
Yes, obviously the nutrition is key, but also think of stress and the damage that stress does to the body. There is a deeper harm that we're not addressing. And so
last week we talked about redlining in San Antonio, and yes, we saw that you look at amputations in San Antonio, and you can see it's in those areas that have been redlined.
Right. It's the same map. What is the causal relationship between redlining and amputation, if that is the same map?
All right. And really quickly, we're almost out of time.
Sugar doesn't cause diabetes. It makes it worse, but it's the damage is deeper.
All right. I want to thank you, Dr. Carlos Roberto Hyen, Dr. Carolina Gonzalez Schlenker, with their study is Community Health Workers as Trust Builders and Healers, a cohort study in primary care. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Dallas Williams and Megan Halbadier Moore, with production assistance provided by Mark Hutchison. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.